another edition of the Most Phenomenal Hockey Show. It is I, Mike, wearing a different jersey as always, and joining me is our good friend. He's the author of Red Rising and covers the Capitals for Hockey's Hot Stove, and sometimes he just needs a hug. It's our good friend, Ted Starkey.
Who doesn't need a hug?
I mean, hey, when we had that conversation during the off season, and I wrote the intros, I told you I was going to do this.
There you go. That's fine. You're allowed, man.
Yes. So, how you been, Starkey? It's been a while since we've seen each other, even though we've both been actually at games that we both have been at the same time, but just hasn't been able to say hello to each other properly.
Yeah, no, it's the nature of the beast. It's good to be busy, but it's being busy, which is, has its pluses and its minuses. But, hockey's back, which is good. Like, we'd all agree on that.
Yeah, so just for reference, we were both at the Capitals Flyers game in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Starkey was in the press box. I was four rows behind the Capitals bench. Thank you, Rich, for that. And then we were both at the Capitals home opener. Once again, Starkey's in the press box, and I'm in my usual spot in section 420. But we'll get to that in a moment. And real quick, before we start hopping into the hockey information, I just want to bring this up that the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is brought to you by Cool Hockey. You like the jerseys you see me wearing on the show, head over to the official NHL jersey retailer for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link of coolhockey.com/TXHT. Again, that is coolhockey.com/TXHT and order your NHL jersey today. So with that, let's hop right on into it. This past Wednesday was the home opener for the Washington Capitals. It was a little bit, as you put it, lackluster for the Capitals. I felt that there was a lot of experimenting and a lot of pain of trying to try some of these new things, that especially on the power play, as the Capitals were, like, I believe 0 for 5 on the power play in the home opener. One observation that I'm going to make real quick before I hand it over to you, Starkey, is I noticed that Alex Ovechkin was playing right on the right side a lot more than on his normal left side. What are your thoughts on that and many other observations you may have had during the home opener?
Well, I think it was interesting because obviously next year the NHL is going to cut down the number of preseason games. And I just kind of thought it was, just a sloppy effort because, it looked like they weren't in sync. They were creating shots, which is, something we didn't see from them in the playoffs last year. But, they weren't particularly good shots for the most part. And there were some broken passes. And I think with Ovi, it was interesting because obviously there's a couple power plays he was coming off before the end. And I know Spencer Carberry made a comment after the game basically saying that, it's kind of like he's going to be used in more situational kind of things, which, you can kind of read. I think they're going to be managing his minutes more this year.
I think the exact quote was, it's not about quantity, it's about quality.
Right, exactly. And I think you're going to see, obviously he was kind of gassed in the playoffs last year. So I think they're going to try to manage his minutes more, especially now that he's got the record. You don't have to worry about that. So I think there'll be some experimentation with him. I don't think you'll see quite the ice time he's had in previous years. But it was interesting. I mean, it's one of those things that I don't think they weren't bad. I just think they were just kind of disjointed. I don't think the passes weren't crisp. And I think, if you saw the preseason, they really didn't use the full lineup to the last two games. And I think that really showed. And like I said, going forward, we're not going to have a six-game preseason anymore. So you probably will have to use your regulars a little bit more than they have in the past. But, it'll be interesting to see how they do this weekend. Obviously, if some of those issues continue against the Islanders and Rangers this weekend, it might be more of a concern. But, it's game one. They lost the opener last year to New Jersey, so it's not the end of the world to lose game one.
Yeah, you mentioned New Jersey last year. Also, at that point, the Devils were playing their fourth game of the season at that point. So the Devils were already kind of in a groove of things by the time the Capitals played their first game, which was against the Devils. And there's also just something about playing the Bruins, because if I remember right, the Capitals played the Bruins in their home opener a few seasons ago, and they got shellacked by Boston as well in that one. Now, this one wasn't a shellacking, of course. I mean, if you really look at it, Logan Thompson made some really, really great saves in the game and really kept the Capitals in the game. So you can't really put this on Thompson, especially the fact that the David Pastrnak goal was like a deflection, and the second goal, there was like a heavy net presence that really, there's only so much Logan can do about that. And the third goal was obviously an empty netter. But one plus side was is that Tom Wilson's goal was just a very beautiful shot that got past Jeremy Swayman. And Swayman, he stood on his head because there was a point where the Capitals were like almost doubling up the Bruins on shots.
And I think a lot of it, they had a couple good chances. I know at one end they had a one that would had a wide open net had they connected on a pass, but the pass just didn't land. And like you were saying, the Pastrnak goal was basically just a deflection through traffic. And obviously the eventual game winner was a bad penalty on Carlson.
Hey,
That's
Carlson was hot.
yeah, no, so they that was kind of they equalize, they got the equalizer, and then they came back and take a bad penalty, and that's usually what happens. But yeah, it's interesting because Boston, I think, played a more regular lineup through the preseason. Coaches will kind of, they have different philosophies in preseason what you do. You want to get guys ready, but you also don't want to get guys hurt. And obviously a high mileage team like the Capitals, I think you saw Spencer Carberry did not really use a lot of regular lineups till late in preseason, so they're a little bit behind the curve. But as I said, it's a long season. I think, like you were saying, the previous 2 years they've had really, they've had slow starts out of the gate. This was not a bad game. It just, they were not very crisp. They were not, they were not sharp on passing. They were not sharp on offense. I think Thompson was very good. Like you said, the goals were pretty tough to stop. There were two really good plays by Pastrnak on two goals with a goalie in net. I thought defensively they're decent. Obviously Boston, I think they won again last night, so they've started off pretty well. But Marco Sturm's a really good coach, and he's making his debut this season with Boston, and I think the players are kind of, they look like they're buying into what he's selling right now.
Yeah, and another player that I was impressed with him when I saw him play in Hershey, and I was very impressed with him Wednesday night at the home opener, Justin Sourdough. I really like the hustle. I like how he really fights for that puck, tries to he just does those little things. And for him to have this opportunity to be an NHL regular, which he couldn't be with the Panthers, and ironically, he grew up a Washington Capitals fan. So the fact that he's getting to do this with his childhood team, I've been very impressed with what I've seen from Justin Sourdough.
Yeah, I got to see him last year during the Calder playoffs in Charlotte during the Kane series last year, and he's a very solid player. It's interesting too because a lot of the guys they sent down, like Kristall, those are guys who might find their way back up sooner than later, depending on what happens. I think a lot of the waiver wire this year for Washington was just to keep guys in the fold. Obviously, Ethan Frank and Clay Stevenson, they were worried they were going to lose, but they kind of timed it so. When there was a whole deluge of waiver selection. So I think you may, if they don't seem to get the offense going, I think you'll see some reinforcements come up really quick between Kristall and Miro, possibly returning. It's just, obviously with the numbers game, you got to make sure the veterans are protected in case, the rookies don't exactly work out right away.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you mentioned Clay Stevenson because, the other goalie that there was a lot of talk about was Michael DiPietro of the Bruins. And that day when Stevenson was put on waivers, DiPietro was put on waivers, Kaapo Kähkönen was put on waivers, and Caden Primeau was put on waivers. Primeau was the only four of the goalies to actually get picked up. So it was very interesting how Primeau ended up being the one of those four goalies. I mean, not a lot of people were talking about Kähkönen, but it was still very interesting to see Primeau be the one that got picked up when Stevenson and DiPietro were available on the waiver wire at that time.
I think it too, with the timing of it is basically when you put a guy on waivers that late, it forces you to have to demote somebody else. Like if you do it a couple of days before, you can kind of futz around and basically figure out, oh, we can keep three goalies for a little bit, But obviously they needed Stevenson to be a backup goalie because once he got sent down from whatever team would claim him, Washington would claim him right back and send him to Hershey. So I think it's kind of just the timing of it. You basically would, if you're a team who is going to take him, you would have to commit to keeping him as your backup goalie. Otherwise, you risk losing him, if not sooner than later.
Yeah, and I definitely think Andrew Kristol and Ivan Merchantchenko will be back up eventually this season. I am really excited with what I was seeing with Andrew Kristol, that he's got so much talent and what he was already doing in Hershey during their preseason. He's making his case to get brought up real soon
Oh
for the
yeah, and he
Capitals, especially if LaPierre and excuse me, like especially if LaPierre's falters kind of like, I mean, everyone kind of faltered in the home opener, let's be honest here. But like, if Leonard's not having that big start that we're all kind of hoping Ryan Leonard has, and even if maybe Sonny Milano, I mean, yeah, he was a healthy scratch for the home opener. I believe he'll be a healthy scratch for at least the game against the Islanders based off of the lines that we saw during the morning skate or the practice today. We'll know more, obviously, on we're recording this Friday, October 10th. So we'll know more, obviously, Saturday morning when we see those morning skate lines of who it could be. But it looks like Milano will probably be out, but he could draw in on Sunday against the New York Rangers for that matchup for the back-to-back in New York that the Capitals have this weekend.
Yeah, I'll be interested with Milano because obviously, he had a there's a lot of question marks coming into camp this year, how healthy he would be and how effective he would be. He only played a couple of games last year. Obviously he played really good the first couple of games of preseason, and now you're just it's kind of like
And then he got a minor injury.
right.
Yeah.
And then like it was saying before, it's part of the deal with this time of year is when guys have are waiver exempt and are not waiver exempt, you don't want to potentially they could put, although Milano probably would have been in, I don't know if anyone would have claimed him with his contract, but they're guys you don't necessarily want to send down if you're worried that someone's going to claim him. So you're more likely to keep, a guy like Miro or Cristal in the, in the system and hope, if you need him, you can call him back up. But, for the time being, let him play with the Bears, and at some point, if you need a shakeup, they're available, and you may be able to sneak a guy down through waivers later in the year.
Yeah, and a good gauge is really the first 10 games of the regular season. And we've only played one of 82, which this is the last time we're going to be able to say it's only game one of 82, because next season it becomes an 84 game season, which is a part of the reason, as you were saying, why this shortened preseason for next season as well. Not only that, but I think also, and I forget who I heard who said this. Oh, I think it was Alan May at the season ticket holder coffee talk that was the day before the home opener. And Alan May was saying, back in the day when they did the training camps, it's because a lot of the players came back like out of shape. So they needed the training camp to really just get everyone back into shape for, the regular season. But now, with how these guys train during the off season now, there's really not a lot of guys who are quote unquote out of shape,
Right. The funny thing is, it was common, 30, 40 years ago, guys would have off-season jobs. They'd basically work at home wherever they were for 3 months, come back, need to get into shape. And it's not like you were saying, the players are in such good shape because you have to be. If you're not in shape, you're probably gonna be out of a job. So I think what's changed is, the players see it as a year-round deal. There's really maybe in the off season guys maybe take a month off, and otherwise they're working out, they're on, they're skating.
They're
And so it's a
doing
lot different than it used to be.
clinics and schools and stuff like that. A lot of them do the clinics and schools now. So it
And I
keeps them
think
on the
the other
ice.
reason too is, it used to be a lot more profitable for owners to kind of have preseason games because, you got to remember, preseason games are pure profit. You pay the players a stipend during preseason, whereas, obviously during the regular season, whatever salary is drawn out, you're making that, your ticket prices minus what you're paying out in salary. So it used to be a lot less profitable. Obviously, the owners are getting two more games to split. So instead of, they're getting an extra, probably an extra home game revenue out of playing 84 versus 82. They did 84 for a couple of years in the 90s, but that involved neutral site games. They would have 82 games home on the road, and they would play these two games and wherever.
I
But
remember
now,
one game. I remember that because wasn't it the Caps and the Rangers in Vegas or something like that, or Phoenix?
they played, I'll have to look it up, but they played, I think it was like Indianapolis and
I
a
remember
lot of.
the Caps and Rangers. They did a neutral site game, and remember, like, this is like early 90s, so I'm like a little kid. But I clearly remember they played that game like out west. It wasn't in the Midwest. It was out west. And it was so weird watching that game on TV because it was one of the rare
Yeah, that
televised ones.
they basically, if you look at a lot of the places where they have the neutral site games, is a lot of the expansion cities. Minnesota hosted a game at the Target Center before they built XL. You saw Columbus hosted a couple games.
I thought when did the North Stars move to Dallas? Was
It was
that
not, it was right before that, 90. At that right the year after they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, so 92.
and that was around the time of the neutral site games.
Yeah, no,
So
it's not, it's before the lockout. The neutral site games went away with the first Bettman lockout.
94, I believe that was.
Yeah, but a lot of that, as I said, it was their hope was we're going to go to these cities that don't normally have NHL hockey and basically see what the expansion what the temperature is for expansion. They didn't necessarily draw well because you're having two teams come in the middle of November, and it's not necessarily the best spot for games. But they had that. But as I say, say before is now you have two an extra home game to kind of defer the loss of the preseason revenue, and the preseason games that they don't sell well. A lot of teams end up giving it away if they don't have season ticket packages. So I think they just figured it was easier just to get an extra of regular gate in rather than one or two extra preseason gates.
Yeah. So, and then, like, obviously, of course, if your team makes the playoffs, that's extra revenue there for the teams as well. So,
Right. Yeah, that's the other area of pure pro. You ever want to know why teams want to make the playoffs even if they last a round? It's because all they have to pay out is the league stipend for, they give. There's a pool of money from TV, and every player gets paid by how many rounds you make it. So, you look at some of the players like Ovechkin. I think, he'll play for X amount of dollars during the regular season, but he'll play a small fraction of that to play in the playoffs. And so it's a lot different with that, what they do. But it's, I think it, plus, it'll be interesting too because they're going to start the season in September, so. This time next year, we'll be like a couple of games into it already. And, the presumption is they'll be done by mid-June. We'll see about that. But,
yeah, the fingers crossed Caps home game on my birthday, like they used to do back in the day. I mean, back in the day, these seasons would start on October 1st. Hey, happy birthday, Mike. You get to start the season on your birthday, you know? Go to a Caps game. It's like, yes, I would take that any day of the week.
Yeah. Well,
So.
a lot of that too is they wanted to put a, they wanted to put the Stanley Cup Finals after Memorial Day because it's not in, especially when the finals moved to broadcast television because it wasn't on Nielsen ratings as much. So the
Well,
network.
and the one thing I always hear is like, oh, well, we don't want the cup to be awarded in May because that's apparently like sweeps month for the TV networks and everything. And it's like, I don't care. The cup should still be awarded before the end of May anyways. It shouldn't be be dragged out into June, you
Yeah,
know?
well, I said it just, the old days it just used to be because the finals were on ESPN or sports channel, so they didn't care about the ratings as much. But once ABC got games, Fox got games, they wanted to make sure. It's basically the mid 90s where it started to switch. Around the early 90s, the final was over by Memorial Day, and 10 years later, you're seeing that. I don't think obviously the Caps final from 98 didn't end until the 19th.
Yeah,
So,
I believe, I believe that was the 19th. But like when the Caps won the cup in 2018, that was June 7th. So at
right.
least that way, it's like, oh, Thank God we're not going so deep. But then when you looked at the schedule for just this past Stanley Cup final between Edmonton, Florida, part two, Electric Bugaloo. Sorry, all the jokes are going out because of a convention. I've been paying attention to this for this upcoming weekend. So whenever there's a second, a part two of something, it's always Electric Bugaloo. If you don't get the
Exactly.
reference, look it up on Google. Anyways, but
Breaking
like
through.
when you looked at the schedule, one of the things, and it's like I know my father and I, we talk about this all the time because we hate it so much, is that in the first round, you have home game one, game day off, game two. And then potentially 2 days off in between. And it's like you don't need in the first two rounds 2 days off in between games. And then when we got to the Stanley Cup final, you would have game one, I think it was game one, day off, game two, 2 days off, game three, 2 days off, game four, 2 days off, game five, potentially 2 days. I think that was a 1 day off, game six, 2 days off, game seven, if necessary. That is so unnecessary for scheduling. If you wanted to make sure that you lined up with the NBA finals, which I think could be one of the reasons, it could
Oh, it is.
literally, it could easily go game one, Stanley Cup, game one, NBA, game two, game three, game three. You don't have to have 2 days off and all this other, because that just bloats the schedule so much further into June. And then you have teams literally rushing a couple days later to get into the draft. Like those teams in the cup finals are just rushing at that point.
Particularly, used to be that ESPN and TNT were the NBA's rights holders too. So they would make sure that they wouldn't overlap. And that's basically why. And it's also, there are certain days they won't put the finals on unless they have to, because there's some days they want ratings more than others. Like you won't usually see, it's usually Saturday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday. Maybe you'll see a Monday, but it's rarely Wednesday. It's rarely Sunday. That's usually the days they want the ratings. So a lot of it is driven by TV. And like you were saying, spacing out the series, it used to be, first round series, even if you have best of seven, they would play back to back one and two, day off, back to back three and four, then day off five, six, seven. Now, it takes them, 4 or 5 days to play two games. And, they don't want to make sure they put, all the games were on in one night, all eight series were going. Now you don't see that anymore. You see, maybe the West is one night, East is another.
Well,
So they spread it out.
I definitely know first round, and I know this because I'm the one who primarily, along with the help of Dixon, creates the dailies. And during the playoffs, how they try to do it, at least in the first, they always try to do first round, two Eastern Conference games, two Western Conference games. That way they split it, so that way they always have something going through the night. So, something I've studied the last like 3 years of doing dailies on my website for it.
Yeah. By the way, looking up the four cities that hosted the Caps in neutral site games: Indianapolis, Milwaukee, Halifax, and what was the other one? I have it up here. Cleveland.
Cleveland.
So
Man, I thought they did one out west.
no, they did. Well, would do preseason games. The funny part is you're talking about Dallas. The year after they moved, they played at Target Center. So, like the first, it was 90, 92, 93, Dallas moved, or Minnesota moved to Dallas. Then, December 93, they played Ottawa at Target Center. How's that for strange?
That's like adding salt to the wound by Bettman there.
Exactly. So, but
It's
yeah,
like, ouch.
you saw a lot of these, the cities that eventually got expansion teams. It was just interesting that. And they would have, obviously you'd have preseason games there. Like you don't see that in a lot anymore in preseason. Hershey obviously was the first time the Caps had been there since 2006, but 20 years ago it wasn't uncommon to see the Caps play in Baltimore or other AHL cities. And I think really the only place they kind of played that was unusual in the last 2 decades is when they were in Hockeyville. But other than that, I
Did
think they
they?
both.
I don't think they've ever played in a Hockeyville game.
They did 2017. Let me see.
I don't recall that. Oh yeah, you're right. They did do one.
Yeah, it was.
And I remember when the Caps did the Baltimore stuff because at the time the Capitals were trying to They called it the Baltimore Hockey Classic, even though it was a preseason game. And that was
Right.
just because they're trying to branch back out to the Baltimore base. But the problem was is that the arena, even though it's been renovated now, and I don't think it could still handle it today, could not deal with ice hockey. Like the ice was just awful.
Yeah, no, and they had lots of issues. I know they had to, apparently you could see through the seat of the pavement.
Yeah, I was at the first game and I remember where I was sitting for that game. I was in the hundreds. I was maybe like 10 rows back from the bench and I could literally see the concrete. And I remember leaning over to somebody going like, "Man, somebody's going to get hurt because that ice is bad."
Yeah, no, it was I mean, I know in terms of the American Hockey League, they've wanted to return to that area at some point, but the ice is just, you know, their old Baltimore Arena is not equipped for even AHL hockey anymore.
Even with
It's
the renovations, it's not.
no, the ice plan is just not there, and you know, the layout's kind of weird. So it's, you know, I think it's like you were saying, I think, you know, the Capitals wanted to market to Baltimore and you know, kind of include them, but it didn't become feasible anymore.
Yeah. So let's talk about the rest of the division real quick. What are you seeing from the likes of the Hurricanes, the Devils, and the Rangers? Because let's be honest, I think those are the three teams that everyone from The Athletic and from ESPN are apparently going to say are going to make the playoffs, and potentially the Capitals are not at all, which is kind of laughable. I do agree with your assessment that the Capitals are going to regress a little bit, but I could see them in maybe the 2-3 spot in the division of the Metro. I see Carolina maybe being number one. The Devils will be up there if they stay healthy, and the Rangers are going to be the real, in my opinion, wild card with Mike Sullivan now as their head coach. Pittsburgh, Philly, they're still kind of, I could see Philly being over Pittsburgh, just because of progression, whereas Pittsburgh's, I think, still needs to have take a couple steps back before they can move forward. And then Columbus, I think, could be a dark horse.
Right. I mean, I think like starting out with Washington, I think, you know, I do think they regress a little bit, but I think that's more, you know, typically after you have like a season like the Caps had last year where you kind of overachieve in the regular season, I think you realize sometimes your effort is better saved than spent in the regular season. So you see these teams drop a little bit, but, you know, I still see the Caps as a 100-point team, 100 plus, maybe 105. And so I think they would definitely be in the mix for that top spot. I don't see them falling to a wild card. I do think they're one or two with Carolina. Carolina, I think, I mean, they seem to be the hot pick right now. I'm not, I will say, I think they're a very good regular season team. That goaltending still gives me a lot of pause in the playoffs. I think, you know,
Frederick
you put,
Anderson keeps getting hurt.
yeah, and, you know, and it's, they're just they're a very skilled team. They can skate. But I also think, like I said, you really need a good goaltender to win 4 rounds of the playoffs. And I know, like you were saying, all the, you know, a lot of predictions are for them to go win the Metro, win the East, and win the Stanley Cup. Unless they improve their goaltending, I think it's going to be very hard for them to win the Stanley Cup. I just think that, I just don't think that Anderson can handle that workload for 4 rounds. Like I said, they obviously, they're kind of hoping, like Colorado did a couple years ago, that we win the Stanley Cup with, you know, with okay goaltending just because we push the ice. But I don't think they're that level of skill. And, you know, obviously getting Ehlers from Winnipeg, you know, he's got a lot to prove in the playoffs. You know, he's a great player. He kind of was the big fish in a pretty bad UFA market. Which incidentally we may be seeing again next year with all the players signing already. But you know, he was the big fish, and so I think there's a little bit of overcompensation. But you know, Carolina's a very good team, as I said. I think they will be better than 99 points last year for them.
The
Devil,
Keandre Miller pickup on defense was a very solid pickup for them. I
yes.
feel I know there's a lot of people probably in New York going like, "Oh, he wasn't that great." It's like, no, I think I always thought highly of Keandre Miller. It's just, and now he has a fresh start. He had two goals last night in his debut as a Hurricane against the Devils in that 6-3 win. You know, I think Miller's going to do very well in Carolina.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing too is, you lost two guys who are more stay-at-home type defensemen in Orlov and Burns. They weren't necessarily overly flashy, but you do need these guys who can defend the net. And obviously, I think Caroline's a little bit lacking on that as well. You don't want to end up like the Buffalo Sabres and have all puck rushing defensemen, because at some point you do need someone to play defense. And I know analytics built teams, those guys are harder to quantify, but you do need a guy who can basically clear out the net, make sure you block shots and stuff like that. So, like I said, I mean, Carolina is a very good regular season team. I would expect them in the top two as well. I just think that unless they address the goaltending at the deadline, which they may, but at this point, as built, I would not trust them to win four rounds.
Yeah. And we know for a fact that Carolina will not be signing Carter Hart on October 15th. It has come out that they've kind of, even though, and it's a very interesting thing, and about the whole contrast of things, that there was an Athletic article about it, how Carolina players were open to talking about the potential of Carter Hart coming in. Fan base revolted against that, which has led to Carolina going, you know what? We're not going to pursue this. Sounds like Vegas is going to be the destination for Carter Hart now, which means Vegas might have a goalie on the market that, the Hurricanes could potentially go after, and maybe in an Adin Hill, or I'm blanking on who the backup goalie for him is right now in Vegas, because they keep changing their backup goalies every year lately, apparently, since they won the cup.
Well, otherwise the Caps wouldn't have Logan Thompson.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Caps got one of those guys. But
Right.
yeah, so it's kind of an interesting because obviously Carter Hart at the time when he was with the Flyers before he had to step away for the trial, he is a certifiable number one goalie. I don't think any of those guys should be back in the NHL this year or for a while. I think they should go the route of like what happened with Quenneville and Bowman, where they were gone for a few years. Because they legitimately went to trial over it. And as I said on the last episode, just because you're found not guilty does not mean you're innocent. So that's just my feelings on it. I'm not going to rehash everything I said on the last week's episode, but so that is that's something that obviously they lost out on for the Hurricanes, is Carter Hart, because of the fan backlash on that.
I mean, and a guy like Hart, hockey wise, I mean, he hasn't played in a year and a half, so he'll probably be in the American League for a while anyway. I think, and the thing is with Hart, it was interesting. When he came up, I saw him play a couple of times in Lehigh Valley, and he obviously had high expectations. And Philadelphia is kind of where the goaltenders go to die. You see all these guys who suffered in Philly, and then went on to find better pastures elsewhere, like Bobrovsky and
Essentially, Pat Post Hextall.
right, exactly. Yeah, it's a tough place to play for a goalie. And he did not really seize the number one role like people thought he would before all this happened, obviously. So it'll be interesting to see how he does,
Well,
hockey wise. I mean, obviously.
a big part of that was because Hextall wanted him to marinate a little bit more in the minors and didn't want to call him up right away. And then obviously, when Snyder passed away, Comcast took over, and they just kind of said, well, we're changing your plans, and well, fired him, obviously, brought in Chuck Fletcher, which was hands down the worst general manager move for any team ever. And then, it's kind of like Fletcher forced up Hart quickly, forced up
Yep.
Philippe Myers quickly, forced up all these young guys who were almost ready, but were not quite ready yet. And it just, hurts guys in development when it comes to like that. It's like the one thing that Hextall said. It's there's nothing wrong with staying in the minors longer, because it helps you. You're always developing. There's no such thing
Right.
as not developing at all.
A lot of times too, it's confidence, because you have guys who come up, look like a guy like Darren Levi in Buffalo. He left Northeastern, signed with the Sabres behind a pretty porous defense, had trouble, and now he's basically he's going to start the season in Rochester. He was kind of the goalie of the future in Buffalo, and he still can't get out of the AHL. And now they have Georgiev in the the mix, so it's, his
Yeah,
future is very
they
good.
have Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who is the number one, even though he's out injured right now.
Yep.
You have the backup is Alex Lyons, who I think is the starter right now while Luukkonen is out. Then you, as you mentioned, Alexander Georgiev is in the mix as the third guy, and then you Devon Levi,
Yep.
Devon Levi is, like number four on the depth chart now.
Right. And, he's a really skilled guy, but, obviously at Buffalo's another spot like Philadelphia where goaltenders have real tough time just because, like I was alluding to earlier, their defensemen are basically puck movers. They don't have guys who are, who basically can play defense and make life easier for the goalie. And that's a big, big issue. But, it'll be interesting with him. I mean, with Hart, it just like he never really seemed to embrace that number one role. Obviously, Vegas would be a much better defense in front of him, so he probably have a little bit more chance to thrive, but he never really seemed to get the confidence in Philadelphia that they thought he would.
Yeah.
And like I said, it'll probably be a while before you see him anyway.
Well,
Because
according to the thing that Chris Johnson reported on Insider Trading last night is that October 15th he will be signing with Vegas, and then starting, I believe, November 1st he can start doing more workouts, and then November 15th he'll be able to start practicing with the team, and then December 1st his it will be the last day of suspension. And he will become a fully active member of the Vegas Golden Knights. And it sounds like it'll be NHL only, no AHL outside of maybe a conditioning stint.
well, it'll be interesting to see too, because like I said, that's, being gone that long, that's really tough to come in that spot, especially with his history as well. I think it's going to take a while to get used to back to it, but
Yeah,
we'll
and
see.
not only that, I mean, but at the same time, we've seen Gabriel Landeskog come back after a 3-year absence, and now we have just seen Jonathan Toews come back from a 2-year-long absence due to long COVID. Obviously, Landeskog was because of his knee surgeries that he had to have. So, and Landeskog's doing pretty good so far. Toews, I didn't see much of the Jets game last night, but I heard he was pretty decent in his first game back. But it's like, Landeskog was kind of decent in his first game back too in the playoffs, so we kind of give them a little bit of a pass. But it's also sometimes a little easier for a forward or a
Right.
defenseman to get back into the mix after a long layoff like that than it is for a goaltender too.
I think, it's basically when you're a goalie, obviously if you have a bad night, everyone knows about it. If you're a forward, you can have an off game and people won't notice. But if you're a goalie and you give up five or six goals, that, wears on you because you think about it. And I think that's part of the thing. It'll be interesting. I would think, the other thing too is, if you're Vegas, you can send him down. I don't think a lot of teams would line up to claim him in any way, even with the dearth of goaltending around the league, just because of
The
the
fan
whole,
backlash and everything, yeah.
so we'll see. It'll be interesting. And it also depends on if Vegas is doing well in December, do you really want to upend the apple cart
Yeah.
and add a third? I mean, maybe they have a third goal. Even if they do an NHL only contract, you can carry three goals. Teams have done that. It's just, Vegas is not a team that's, we're going to play this season, see how it goes. They want the Stanley Cup. And like I said, if you're introducing a guy like Carter Hart in the middle of a season like this, it's probably not the best situation for anybody, just because the high expectations and, things are going well. That's not the best thing to do. And so it'll be interesting to see how it shakes
And
out.
that's why I say none of these guys should be in the NHL this year, maybe slightly longer. We know Alex Fromentin's playing in Switzerland. Michael McLeod just signed with the KHL. Cal Foote and whoever the other guy was, I can't remember off the top of my head. They were always kind of minor leaguers anyways. They weren't really going to make it into the NHL on a regular basis. So they're kind of like, but like everyone was keeping their eyes on McLeod and Hart specifically, and obviously Ottawa still holds the rights to Fermentin, which they are open to trading that to give him a fresh start. which
Right.
you won't see him in the NHL this year anyways. Neither will McLeod, because like I said, they're both signed overseas now. So it's really just kind of the focus is on Carter Hart at this point. But with that, I want to shift, and real quick before we do, the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is also brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both TXHT.com and in the YouTube show description to try Oats Overnight today. I personally really do like the glazed blueberry donut oats overnight. It is a very delicious one, in my opinion, along with a few others. And they just put out an oatmeal raisin flavor in development that I really, really want to try because raisins and spice is my favorite oatmeal just in general. What's your favorite oatmeal, Starkey?
I'm not a big oatmeal guy.
Oh, well, then with that, we're moving on to
I'm
hockey.
more for you. Put it that
Yeah, more for me. Anyways.
way.
With that, we got to talk about some interesting stuff that happened in the league so far in the very short time that we've had games, which is only 3 days because today, Friday, there are no games. How convenient for us. Why not record on a day where we'll not have to worry about anything happening after we record the episode? Which, by the way, right before we recorded the episode, the Department of Player Safety suspended Jonathan Drouin of the New York Islanders for one game for cross-checking. But we had a really I want to get to the jersey reveals in a bit, but we got to talk about San Jose Vegas real quick, because what happened last night in that game, particularly in the final minutes of the third period, and then what happened in overtime is just insane. It's you have the Sharks breaking down on an empty net. The Golden Knights do an amazing job of playing defense to prevent them from scoring. And there were like, what, 2 to 3 different opportunities to score on this
Yes.
empty net. And the Knights just prevented it from happening. Then the puck gets to Jack Eichel. He shoots it in from the blue line. And the Alex Nedeljkovic, I guess he was just like, when I saw the video, he was just not in the right position. And it goes over his leg, like underneath his glove. And it ties the game to send the game to overtime 3-3. And then in overtime, Nedeljkovic is skating out up to the blue line to play the puck, only for the Golden Knights to kind of get it, pass it to him. And then, like, Riley Smith just does like this little tiny tap in into the net because he's standing in front of the net. It is just the most mind-blowing thing to see happen. And actually, before we started recording, you had mentioned about the Patrick Stefan one
Yes.
with the Oilers and the Stars. And like, but this one I think is a lot crazier because of the fact that when Stefan missed the empty net, he just got cocky. And then the Oilers scored, tied the game, and then won the game in overtime. This one, it was like the Sharks were not cocky. They were just trying to get it to the net. And the Golden Knights just shut them down. And then just poor goaltending. And then obviously the way the overtime winner happened is just, I think this was crazier than what we saw like 20 years ago of Patrick Stefan.
Well, it was interesting too because I noticed, both players on San Jose had numbers in the 70s, and it wasn't Macklin Celebrini. So it was like it's kind of like preseason, but you saw, they were breaking down, couldn't quite get it in. Then the puck went behind the net. They tried to stuff it; it didn't work. And then Vegas took the puck down, and basically he shot it. The goalie wasn't set. It was just like it was one of those things I don't think he expected him to shoot. Because he was basically, it was like watching the 90s, stand-up goalie. He basically just blasted it by him. And it just, like I was saying earlier, this is a time of year in the league where things are not crisp, and that was certainly not crisp.
I mean, what a better time to do it. If you're going to do some insanity, you're going to do it at the beginning of the season.
Exactly. I mean, guys are not up to speed. You see a lot of weird stuff happening this time of year because. Like I said, with a lot of teams, the regulars aren't playing. A lot of the guys who are in preseason are guys in the AHL or UCHL, and the NHLers are kind of taking it easy, making sure they don't get hurt. And so a lot of weird stuff happens in the first couple games.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie. I'm actually surprised that Nedeljkovic was the starter for the Sharks because I thought it was gonna be Askarov to be the
Right.
starter for their home opener, and we actually saw that happen Tuesday night, when the Penguins played the Rangers, we all thought Tristan Jarry was going to get the start for that game, and it ended up being Artturs Szulovs
Right.
instead getting the start. So, so we've seen some interesting decisions like that as well. Now, the difference was that Szulovs got a 3-0 shutout victory over the Rangers, and then Nedeljkovic blew a 3-2 lead into a 4-3 overtime loss. So one of the other interesting things that's happened is I just mentioned the Penguins. So they did an interesting thing last night. The night before, the LA Kings did something very interesting as well, and that was how they unveiled their alternate jerseys. And for those who don't know, what the LA Kings did was they came out in full home gear, like socks, helmets, the jerseys, everything. And they did pregame warm-ups in their home jerseys. 2 minutes before they did the player introductions, they did a video introducing the new alternate jersey, and then the team came out for player introductions and played the game in their brand new alternate jerseys. Silver helmets, different socks, the new jerseys and everything. I have never seen anything done like that before. And then last night in Pittsburgh, the Penguins were wearing yellow socks and yellow helmets with their home jerseys. And then when they came out wearing their alternate jerseys. And I could tell the cat is super excited about this because I see the cat just jumping around back there.
Jersey talk is, everyone gets excited about jersey talk.
Yes. So, and it was just a very interesting, I mean, it was a stressful thing for both of those times for me because it's like, oh man, I have to update the graphics on the website as quickly as possible. I hope they put the jerseys up online so I can grab them, for the graphics purposes, especially when LA did theirs, because I was like up until midnight working on that, thanks LA. Well, especially the fact that there were rumors of a Penguins, the new alternate jersey. Nobody knew anything about the
Right.
Kings. And that's
Yeah.
what makes it so much interesting. What are your thoughts
I mean,
on how they did these unveilings? Like one where there was a little bit of a rumor and then they kind of alluded to it in their pregame warm-up and then unveiled it, and then another one where it's like nobody knew nothing, and then, oh hey, 2 minutes before we bring the players out for their introductions, here's this new jersey we got.
well, obviously, this is the first year with Fanatics having alternate jerseys. Last year they kind of encouraged teams not to use third jerseys. You had some teams with third jerseys, but they're pre-existing models. So obviously this is kind of like a guerrilla marketing. Let's instead of saying, oh, and like the Caps did a couple weeks ago, here's our new third, get ready for it. This is like we're going to show it on, bring it right out and surprise you. Obviously the thing with some of the jerseys, if they're not very good, which obviously has happened. There have been designs that have not been good. You're stuck with these things. If you don't do any test marketing or anything like that, or if the people hate it, you're pretty much you're stuck with what you got.
The
But
jersey
yeah,
jersey.
exactly. I mean, it was interesting how they did it, because obviously a lot of let's be honest, a lot of the reason they do it is sales. And when teams built it up, it was to kind of hype sales. Teams would always start to wear it miraculously around Thanksgiving when people are starting to shop or the holidays. I'll see all these jerseys hit the shelves. Obviously now that kind of ups it a little bit. Maybe, it'll be interesting to see how the reaction was. I remember people were complaining about the Penguins wearing yellow helmets with their traditional jerseys. And all of a sudden, oh, we're wearing these things that look like Nashville. The Kings, obviously, they went with a black and silver version of the 1970s jerseys, which was interesting. Obviously they've kind of embraced they have the Chevron modern logo
Fear the
now.
dark,
Yes, exactly. And now they're
because they used Iron Maiden's
having,
song "Fear the Dark" to promote it.
no, they so it'll be interesting. But yeah, no, I mean, no one expected it. Like, even the beat writers were surprised by it. So it'll be interesting, but like I said, it's something that hasn't been done. I'm sure they'll see how the sales do. Maybe they figure, oh, when people see it, they'll be in the arena, they'll go buy it. If it was on sale, I mean, that's the other thing. If you don't have the jerseys ready on sale, it's kind of a little bit of a, you're losing a little bit of the enthusiasm, because then you have to wait for it, which is always, kind of the thing with the new jerseys. But
Yeah.
so it'd be different. Obviously Fanatics has a different way of doing things. They're probably, this is the first year they could roll these new models out, and so I think they'll be pretty aggressive in that.
Well, how much do you think of it is also maybe the teams wanted to do the marketing this way
I
themselves
think
more than Fanatics?
if it'd been one team, I would say it's a team. If it's two, I think it's something Fanatics wanted. It's too much of a coincidence to, and I don't think, if Pittsburgh didn't think of it 2 nights ago, they wouldn't be prepared to do it last night. So I think it was a coordinated effort. I
Yeah.
would think that seeing how it does, I don't know if anyone's gonna be unveiling anything tomorrow. We'll see. But
God,
yeah.
I hope not. Not with
Yeah.
a 16-game schedule, please, God, no, not tomorrow.
But I would think, back to back nights, I definitely think this is coordinated.
Yeah.
And to see, like I said, they're probably experimenting to see how this does compared to, the slow roll-ups we're all used to. Usually you see a jersey at least a couple of weeks before you see it on the ice.
Yeah.
Obviously, like you were saying, there's no LA you kind of heard about. Pittsburgh, no
No.
one really.
Pittsburgh, you had heard about it. LA, you didn't know about it. So it was the
Right.
opposite. Yeah. Speaking of alternate jerseys, the Capitals did come out with one. My report back in March was true. The Caps brought back the Red Screaming Eagle. I just wasn't sure from what I had heard if it was going to be the Reverse Retro 1.0 coming back or if it's going to be something completely different. Obviously, it was something a little different. It has a little bit more of the 1970s type look to the jersey, but a little bit more modernized. What are your thoughts on the Capitals' new alternate jersey for the what will be at least for the next 3 seasons?
Well, I'll say what I speculated back in the day when they released it. I think this would have been the 50th anniversary jersey had we not had the issues with Fanatics, because clearly it's the base model of the 1970s jersey with the eagle on it. And so I kind of think with this, and especially if you look at the shoulder, Washington is in that gold. So that indicates to me that it probably was going to be the 50th anniversary design, but because of production issues, they ended up bringing back one of the reverse retros as the 50th, even though that jersey has no patches on it, unlike the other two models from last year. So that's my take. I mean, I think it's an interesting homage to obviously the history of the team. Like I said, it's too bad they didn't use it last year because it'd been very appropriate for an anniversary jersey, just because they said you have the gold, a little bit of the gold trim. You have, basically the elements of the two different jerseys they've had.
Yeah.
I will be interested at some point, jersey wise, when the Capitals decide to change out,
And
because,
rebrand.
yeah, because we're going to be on 20 years next year of this current model. And at some point, obviously the driver of the current Caps model sales is number 8. And,
Oh,
obviously he
you mean this guy right here that I'm wearing on
exactly.
my jersey?
Exactly. He's I believe he was second to first, depending on what time period of last season you had in terms of sales. And at some point, I think when he retires, I think you're going to see they'll probably go a different direction. I don't know if they're going to go back towards the old 70s look, if they're going to try to do something different. But I mean, you look at the team wore their base models for 21 years. The Capitals are probably going to match that with their current model, and they wore the Screaming Eagle for 11 years. So you've already passed that. So at some point, I would think you're going to see a new Caps jersey on the horizon. Probably, I would think like 2 or 3 years, but
My
I think that's a
prediction would,
definite possibility.
yeah, my prediction would be I think this is Ovechkin's last year. I think you would agree with me on that. Just the way we're seeing like how Ovi's going to be coached this season, it definitely gives the vibes that this is the last year unless something miraculous really happens. I see we discussed this back in June after the cup was awarded, or during the cup final, I believe. I think it's going to be around the Olympic break. It's probably going to be after the or as they're coming back from the Olympic break, Ovechkin's going to make the announcement of whether he's going to retire or sign on for another year. And I think after his number goes in the rafters, that following season is when the rebrand happens. Like they'll have the rebrand
Yeah.
ready for after the number goes in the rafters.
I will say, I think Ovechkin's decision is going to come down to three things: how competitive the team is, how competitive he is, and if he's happy with the ice time. I think I have a hard time thinking he's walking away if he thinks the team can win the cup next year. I have a hard time thinking he's going to walk away if he still feels he's productive. He's scoring 40, 30, 40 goals again. I predicted he's going to score 30 this year if he's happy with that. And also, I think, with the if he's happy with the time management. Obviously, he's a guy who wants to play all the time. If he doesn't, if he doesn't get that ice time, then he may walk away. I think the one danger, I think if he the longer it goes that he doesn't announce it, I think it's more likely he's going to walk away. I think he's going to be a little leery if he says something at the Olympic break. It's going to become another massive distraction, and I think it's like with the chase last year. As fun as it was for the players, I think they all know it was a massive distraction at the end of the year. And so I think this, if he decides to retire, he's probably not going to say anything until they're eliminated from the playoffs or they win the cup. Because I think he knows that it's going to be a circus once he
The
leaves. I think.
only problem I see with that is we've already seen Anze Kopitar of the Kings announce that this is his last season. So we know for a fact that this is Kopitar's last year in the NHL. So you know we're going to see a bunch of respect for him. I agree with the distraction part. You and I, we've talked about that ad nauseum about that. The only thing is, though, is that the reason I see him announcing it, like coming out of the Olympic break and stuff like that, is because that's essentially kind of what Gretzky did. He announced it with about a month left in the season that he was retiring. So the final game that he played at home at Madison Square Garden, there was a little bit of a build up to it. And something to kind of keep in mind, because I did take a look at this, the Caps' last game of the regular season is in Columbus on a weekday. However, the two last games before that is a Saturday Sunday home and home with the Pittsburgh Penguins. That Saturday, April 10th, they're in Pittsburgh, and then Sunday the 11th, they're at home against Pittsburgh in their home finale. I might actually have the numbers of the days, but you know what I'm saying. That Saturday
Right,
they're in
right.
Pittsburgh. That Sunday they're at home against Pittsburgh.
I will say though,
That could
with
be the
the
last two games Ovechkin plays as a Capital in the regular season, and it makes sense because it is against the Pittsburgh Penguins. I would not see him play that game in Columbus.
I will would say though, with Gretzky, that team was clearly missing the playoffs. They ended up missing by 13 points. So they basically Gretzky, I think, he kind of knew it didn't make a difference if he retired or not in terms of the buildup. I think, like I said, I think he realized it was such an exhausting process, which is why I think he hasn't said anything at this point. Obviously the last five games are on national television, are scheduled to be. The Caps are selling commemorative paper tickets if you want them. So I
No, that
think
was a season ticket holder only.
I know, but still they're doing it, which they haven't done.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's obviously for one reason only. That's for commemorative purposes. And so I think they're preparing for it. But like I said, I do have a hard time feeling if the Capitals are, going to win the division or be in second place, have a legit cup threat, and he's getting significant ice time and production. I do have a hard time thinking he's going to walk away.
Yeah.
I think he would. I kind of think, unless. If the Capitals are, if they totally regress this year, miss the playoffs, I can see him leaving. If he scores 20 goals this year, I can see him leaving. If he's not happy with the ice time, I can see him leaving. But I think if things are going well for Washington, which they should, I'd be kind of surprised. I think he will sign a 1-year deal to stay. And if he does that, as I said, you'll know about the Olympic break, but I think it's the opposite reason. I think if he signs, it'll be around the Olympic break. If he doesn't sign, then I think the possibility goes up, he walks away. But as I said, I would be reluctant after I know how exhausting it was for the team through that whole process last year. I don't think he wants a farewell tour per se. And I just think that he knows if they have a farewell tour, they probably, it's such a distraction that it probably ruins his last chance at a Stanley Cup. So I would say, You're going to know around the Olympic break, but I think it would be the opposite announcement. If he doesn't sign by that point, I think then it's a pretty good indication he's not coming back, but you may not know about it till they're done.
Yeah. So with that, Starkey, where can the people find you on social media?
Well, at Ted Starkey, and you can also find me now at hockeyhotstove.com, doing a weekly column on the Caps in the NHL, and it's a good place to be. And glad to be writing a lot more than I used to.
Yep. And of course, obviously, you can find everything for the Morphin' on the Hockey Show on txhthockey.com and at txht underscore hockey on most social media. And then Facebook is just txht hockey, same with YouTube. So, with that, this has been the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. Thank you to Ted Starkey for joining us this week. And obviously, I'm Mike. And until next time, we will see you on the ice.